can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance, and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I'd deliver. Bad news on the doorstep, I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride, but something touched me deep inside today. The music died. So bye-bye, Miss American Pie.
Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's tape number 426, February the 1st, 1980. This is side one of the tape, opening with the song American Pie. The United States of America, the American Pie, is quickly diminishing, and I feel the leadership in this country selecting people like Reinhard Gehlen, Hitler's chief of intelligence, to make our CIA, German Henry Kissinger, and Polish German Mr. Brzezinski to make our foreign policy decisions are taking America away from Americans and leading us to a destructive World War III. I'm going to be making a separate tape, just a biographical tape for people who listen to these shows on radio stations or who have not subscribed for a long, long time, as an introductory starter tape, so that if they begin subscribing, they have this first tape as a way of introduction, and it will explain my political views, where I stand, right, left, or middle, what I think of the various candidates, my overview of history, where I think we got into trouble, and where the leaders are taking us now, and how the categories of the information that I put on the tape each week fit into that overview. I get a lot of letters and requests for different pieces of information that I don't want to cover each week on the tape. And if there's one, what I call a starter tape as a background, or if you have lost track of what it was that I was driving at in bringing up certain information, you can get the starter tape and get your background on that tape, and then I won't have to answer so many letters, and you will have it, because my overview of history, where I think we got into trouble and where we're going, hasn't changed one iota in 16 years. The more I study, the more it confirms my worst fears, and the newspapers seem to support those kinds of fears, and the only way to untangle this mess we're in is to continuously study the roots of how we got there. You have to take the daily newspaper articles and then relate them to the past events and realize that there's this continuous line of cause and effect that I keep saying isn't coincidental, that I believe it is arranged by conspirators to manipulate us to a specific place and goal that they want us to arrive at. The past 3 weeks I've been talking about the arrests of Mr. Turpel and Mr. Kirkella at the Hilton Hotel in New York City, December 24th. It isn't hard to update you on the news of these arrests because there's so little in the news. But for our tapes, this is part four, to continue with that series. Last week on the tape, I talked about the gun-running suspects who were tied to British dealers and mentioned Mr. Samuel Cummings, who lives in London, who supplies weapons for gun-runners, international gun-runners, who supply the so-called third world of Libya, Idi Amin, and the Palestinian Liberation Organization, Mr. Gaddafi. And the purpose of emphasizing the importance of the arrests in New York is to show that the men arrested have links to international terrorism that looks like it's left the third world, but which is directly linked to the Central Intelligence Agency and counterintelligence, and firms in the United States and dummy fronts with banks all over the world that are actually supplying these weapons, so that at the time that we do go to war against the Soviet Union, all of a sudden the third world that would align itself with Russia will be voting and going against the Soviet Union. It will be heavily armed and will in turn turn down all their own people, not raise their standard of living, but become weapons merchants, gun runners, and narcotic dealers pumped by the Nazi mafia with funds which started originally after World War II, taken to Argentina and then to Swiss banks. That's a big lot to swallow if you haven't followed these patterns, but the only way I say is you'll have to follow with the back tapes and keep reading the newspapers. Last week, I quoted an article from January 17th, New York Times. 2 days later, there was an article in the New York Times on Mr. Samuel Cummings, the arms dealer, called The Private World of an International Arms Dealer, and it tells how Mr. Cummings lived in Philadelphia. I mentioned that last week, born in the main line in Philadelphia in 1927, born to early first-generation Americans of English-Irish descent. He went into the Army, and then on a GI Bill, he went to George Washington University, where he got a degree in political science, and worked for the Central Intelligence Agency from 1950 until he went to England and opened up this store for weapons, and he's kept up his CIA contacts. The New York Times said they were useful for his gun running. He set up a Delaware corporation, listed himself as vice president. He started selling weapons to the Panama National Guard, and then he went to California and sold some weapons, and Nicaragua, Costa Rica, into Central America, and then he went to Europe in 1957. And 1957 is a most important date. I'm going into it later. In terms of the Appalachian meeting, organized crime and the Central Intelligence Agency, they were meeting in New York and setting up their base of operation across the United States. In Europe and Italy, the mafia were reorganizing in 1957, and they were working with the CIA, Lucky Luciano and Carlo Gambino, and the Central Intelligence Agency and the organized crime were linked closely together ever since World War II, and were going to combine their muscles starting in 1957, a very important year. And that's the year that the CIA agent Samuel Cummings from the main line of Philadelphia, having pumped his guns in Costa Rica, Panama, California, and so forth, went to London and opened up his shop. And he now has a small arms factory, the New York Times described. He keeps 120,000 square feet foot office in Alexandria, Virginia. He has another weapons factory near Warrington, Virginia, with Sporting Arms. And then in England, he has what they call a red brick fortress outfitted with elaborate security. And inside, he has a, this is the New York Times article, 22.5 million inventory of 200,000 small arms waiting to be sold. And in another building in Manchester, England, he has 40 million rounds of ammunition. This is a lot of ammunition. He admits that he worked and supplied weapons to Batista in Cuba before Castro came into power. That's when Frank Sturgis, who was involved with the John Kennedy assassination, was arrested at the Watergate Hotel, worked with the CIA, was running the gaming tables in Cuba. The links of the CIA with the anti-Castro Cubans, with these gun runners and organized crime, is a ball of wax which is being silenced by the Associated Press, United Press, Washington Post, and the only article I got last week was from the New York Times on the 22.5 million inventory of weapons, the 40 million rounds of ammunition, the fact that this was an establishment person from the main line in Philadelphia, first-generation family, early Americans, worked with the Central Intelligence Agency, attended George Washington University, and as I say, has pumped his weapons into Nicaragua, Costa Rica, Panama, has warehouses in the United States, in Virginia, and a massive supply in England. This is the man that supplies the guns for Mr. Turple and Coca-Cola, who in turn have safe houses for murders, assassins, assassination teams. We won't repeat or go back again on these. If you have the past tapes, if not, you can get them, and I will keep you informed each week on any news that I can get on this story, and if you have any, send it to me. On tape number 425, that's January 25th, this last week, I closed the tape with asking the question, who is William Taub? And I mentioned a book, Forces of Power, by William Taub. That is available. I talked to Tom Davis at Research, and the address is on the slip that goes with the tapes if you want it. William Taub, Grosset and Dunlap, published in New York in 1979, Forces of Power. This is an amazing book for what it tells and also for what it leaves out. But I would want to bring out a few points that are in that book and tie them together with some other information I want to share this week. Among things, Taub was the lawyer for General Trujillo's daughters. He ran the Dominican Republic. It was the president of Dominican Republic, General Trujillo. And he was murdered by two men from the Central Intelligence Agency, and William Taubes said one of them was John Roselli, part of the Robert Mayhew CIA assassination teams under the cloak of the Hughes Organization. Later, Mr. Taub represented one of the daughters trying to get back money from the father's estate that the brothers had taken overseas to Madrid, and Taub was the lawyer for one daughter, and Richard Nixon was the lawyer for the other daughter. He got over $1 million fee to represent the daughter of Trujillo when Nixon was working with the same assassination teams that murdered Trujillo. In October of last year, October the 5th, 1979, on tape 409, I briefly mentioned the Vatican and the Pope having the largest, most powerful voice in the world. This is Pope Paul VI had a radio transmitter put in, and the tower surpassed Iran's outlet, the most powerful shortwave radio station. This came from the San Francisco Chronicle article in 1976 about this radio station, and I mentioned it in 1979. In Mr. Taub's book, he talks about Howard Hughes, how he was linked to business interests called Teleprompter, and they had a large contract in Brooklyn. It was a closed-circuit educational program that they were working on. And he thought the Vatican would be interested in this closed-circuit educational material, and he wanted to pioneer the communication system based on microwave linkage. Now, this is interesting that the first story of this tower broke in 76, because after 1966, there was no use. There was just the CIA and the mafia combined. So really what the CIA was doing under the guise of the Howard Hughes Empire, just like the assassination teams were done under the guise of the Howard Hughes Empire, they built for the Vatican what they called a communication system based on microwave linkage, and the purpose was to avoid normal communication methods, that they were going to be under the supervision of federal communication systems, and that if the Vatican and the CIA, which is the federal government, could avoid any conflict with the federal communications, they could have any messages they want by beaming them from satellite, put them in orbit for this purpose. And this was considered a breakthrough for the Vatican in communications. And Robert Mayhew, the same man who set up the assassination teams for the CIA and organized crime, had a meeting with Mr. Taub, the man who wrote the book Forces of Power. And he describes, it's on page 72, it would be a real coup for the Vatican to have the newest communication. The satellite would be launched from Vatican soil. And then in quotes, the FCC wouldn't have a damn thing to do with it, and the Hughes technical experts could work with it. So William Taub went directly to the Pope because they said you don't have any kind of censorship problems. You can do anything you want. You'll be linked directly around the world. And there's a side remark in William Taub's book. He says, when the idea came through of this Howard Hughes, Robert Mayhew, CIA satellite to put on Vatican soil to have complete freedom of communication without interruption of the normal channels or anybody picking the messages up. Mr. Taub writes, when this idea came through, the Pope was dead. The Pope John the 23rd was an amazing man. He died just months before John Kennedy was killed, 5 months before John Kennedy was killed. There's a book by Norman Cousins, The Improbable Triumvirate, on John Kennedy, Pope John the 23rd, and Khrushchev, and the desire for world peace, the signing of the nuclear test ban treaty in the atmosphere, d'entente, which is the thing that the three men lived for and wanted peace. At the time in 63 when these men died, two of the, out of the three died, then Giovanni Battista Montini became Pope Paul VI. And it's Pope Paul VI that worked with Robert Mayhew and Howard Hughes, and he also is that famous secretary of the Vatican that I keep referring to, who wrote the passport for Martin Bormann and other Nazis to begin a world Nazi organization down in South America. So the project, according to Mr. Taub, getting back to the radio antenna, had political overtones. He said it involved the Central Intelligence Agency, that the Vatican at the time, he says in his book, was not interested in. As a end of section on the Vatican communication system between Howard Hughes and the CIA, he assumes or passes over that this is something that was wanted but didn't go through. But whether he knows it didn't go through or whether he's just saying that to cover it up, it's ridiculous to write it at this time because in 1976, it was in the newspapers, and it was already exposed as a fait accompli that Montini, Pope Paul VI, had put through the communication system. He also says, William Taub, in his book on page 75, that he saw Howard Hughes in 1966 at the Beverly Hills Hotel, and that he never did see Howard Hughes again. He doesn't ask where he is or anything about him, but he reveals the fact that Howard Hughes was escorted by the Central Intelligence Agency to Massachusetts General Hospital. And many of you are familiar with my article about Howard Hughes disappearing from the Boston Hospital and being taken to a Greek island by Onassis. And then the CIA took over the entire Hughes organization and moved west to Las Vegas to take over the entire heart of organized crime in 1966, the skimming money and the mafia money, and combine our intelligence agencies with the organized crime connection. I'm going to refer to that later based on some other information that has come in, but Mr. Tao brings up the fact that Hughes was taken to Boston by the Central Intelligence Agency, and he also states that Johnny Rosselli, the same man who was killed right after he testified at the House Select Committee on Assassinations, who he names as being part of the CIA team with Mayhew, who killed General Trujillo down in Dominican Republic. He says that John Rosselli and the CIA escorted this man known as Howard Hughes on a train to Boston, and then he never saw Hughes again. At least he's honest about that. He also says in his book, these names surface over and over again, he says, like tentacles of an octopus. And he talks about the Vatican wanting to use the CIA and the satellite communications with their link-up anywhere in the world, and mentions what a grim thought. After Taub went to the Vatican to see the Pope about the Howard Hughes CIA organized crime connections, because they keep appearing over and over in articles that are coming out recently, and I'm going to swing to an article in the Village Voice this last week on the organized crime Vatican CIA connections. Mr. Taub, in the book Forces of Power, says the project of the CIA satellites and communications with the underworld all became linked together. And when he got home from his trip to Rome, a gentleman called him on the telephone to see how the communication idea went, and the man was Richard Nixon. And again, Richard Nixon had called him on the Trujillo affair. The lawyer representing the Trujillo daughter, and then Nixon called, well, how did your trip go to Rome with the satellite, CIA satellite? And Taub said, well, why are you calling me? What do you care? And Nixon said, I'm the counsel for the satellite project for Howard Hughes. Now, Howard Hughes' name has always been linked to one of the first persons that handpicked Richard Nixon to be the front for their organization for, in quotes, the security of the United States, which is the umbrella for a lot of the mischief that we've gotten into in the past years through the entire Cold War period, and then the war in Vietnam, and getting ready for the war in the Middle East. Richard Nixon said, I'm counsel on the satellite project for Howard Hughes. Nixon had funds that came from Madame Chenault, he talks about in the book. He had cash funds from the Shah of Iran. He was the daughter, representing the daughter of Trujillo, a multimillionaire, and then Nixon shows up as the attorney for Howard Hughes on the Vatican CIA satellite system. I thought that was interesting. He keeps bringing back these connecting themes in the book that I stress so much. The CIA, the Vatican, the network for the Nazi resurgence, the funding, and the organized crime connections that weave in and out. And if you get those cast of characters straight, it gets less confusing as news stories break or you read books in the past, because there is this strong connection of these various tentacles which are intertwined, but which we never thought of. No one thought of the Vatican as being part of CIA or the Vatican as being part of organized crime. It may have been whispered in certain sections of cities from time to time, but now I see it in the newspaper quite frequently. As the Michele Sindona case comes out in New York, there's constant references to Sindona, the CIA, Sindona, organized crime, Sindona, and the Vatican. Richard Nixon wanted William Taub to work on the Finance Committee for his reelection when he was running for President of the United States. And Taub writes that he was asked to be on this committee. He knew of Taub's work for Eastern oil-producing countries, particularly Iran, And Nixon knew that he helped the Shah of Iran in a dispute with England during the Truman era. That means when they were taking Iran into the American cloak and taking it away from British Petroleum. And he said Nixon wanted to obtain sizable, unmarked cash contributions from Mideast sources. He said Nixon had a preoccupation with untraceable cash donations. We found out a little bit of that at Watergate, but of course most of this was hushed up. There was another item in the book, Forces of Power, that I want to call attention to, which is dear to my heart. He tells how he wanted to go to North Vietnam to work with the trade unions and take Jimmy Hoffa there in preparation to end the war, and how he had agreements as a middleman. This Taub has been very important circles from the White House of Eisenhower, Kennedy, Nixon, various presidents, and then working with organized crime and labor leaders, and they had an idea of stopping the war in North Vietnam, and all of a sudden he learned that Henry Kissinger really didn't want the war ended, and it came as a blow to him that they were prolonging this war. He accuses them of prolonging the war, that they didn't want it to end. And on page 184 of Forces of Power, he says, after that bombshell of learning some more about Kissinger's behavior with Hoffa, Fitzsimmons, and the Vietnam confrontations, he said, I learned Kissinger's meeting with Le Duc Tho had been arranged to destroy everything I had done. Kissinger, whom Le Duc Tho had warned me, was a Nazi. I keep wanting to bring that up because here's the leader of the North Vietnam working with the Soviet Union at that time and had information that Kissinger was actually a Nazi. And I think except for Conspiracy Digest that I wrote for Peter McAlpine on Henry Kissinger being a Nazi, I haven't seen it in any other book. This is the first time that I've seen it printed in a book. And of course, Forces of Power by William Taub has so many other things that go along with the research that I've done that my eyes called attention to this fact, because you're going to see more and more of that years to come when the real truth comes out about the Kissinger family. One more interesting item in the book Forces of Power by William Taub was that he went to Hollywood to work on a movie about the Rothschild family. And he moved from his New York apartment, and he had two paintings there, one a Thomas Gainsborough, and the other was a still life by Rubens. And when he moved to California, the Rubens was missing. Now, this man is no slouch. He carries some pretty fancy artwork around. And when he went to the insurance company to claim the loss, which was must have been tremendous for an original Rubens, it was hard to trace it because it was a gift from the Vatican. Now, Taub had been there making the connections with the CIA and Howard Hughes organization and mafia for this great communication systems. And the purpose of giving him a picture, what he says, is that he helped set up free films for a boys' orphanage in Rome at one time. So the Vatican gave him, when Cardinal Spellman was visited by Cardinal Ottaviani in New York City, they brought two pictures for him, a Rubens and a Gainsborough, which were a gift from the Vatican. And I go back again to that book that I have had on the other tapes on the Bormann receipt, how Goering and the Nazis collected valuable artwork from all over the world and dispersed it. Now it's in German embassies, and it is almost impossible for the families to obtain those that were killed in the concentration camps. So I wonder how much artwork the Vatican got in exchange for allowing Bormann to have passports, or how they accumulated these paintings and how many people they give these gifts out to. William Taub must be a very important person, and he had to authenticate his gift because they had handed him a famous painting by Rubens, The Bowl of Fruit. And wouldn't you like to know who owned that painting originally, where it came from, and trace that painting and how it got in the hands of the Vatican? Again, the Bormann, Nazi, Hughes, CIA, always going back. These artworks will appear and reappear in books. This book is filled with a lot of little goodies, such as his having a Rubens and a Gainsborough as gifts from the Vatican. And it's really hard to believe that William Taub got those for setting up movies at an orphanage in Rome. I read a while back that certain corporations wanted to launch private satellites, such as this that the Vatican had set up with the CIA, so that they don't have to travel around, people don't have to leave home, and they have closed circuit only between each other so that nobody can tap the lines and know what's going on. Just recently, the RCA had a huge communication satellite that, in quotes, got lost. It was launched by NASA, and it's out, and there's some space. They can't account for it. I wonder if the launching of that satellite at taxpayers' money isn't actually a worldwide communication network system between, say, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the Central Intelligence Agency, or Interpol, to keep track of people and document it through the data banks to locate people, and that this RCA satellite is, in fact, operating, but they said it's lost in space, and so that the massive thing could be launched, but they don't have to explain what it was because it's not visible anymore on the monitoring screen, and there's no accountability for where it went. This may be just one more communication satellite that telephone operators won't have to listen to while these people go about their messy business. Forces of Power by William Taub also mentions that he brought the black singer Josephine Baker to Las Vegas. He calls it Teamsters pension fund operation known as Syndicate City. He described Vegas in 1952, that far back, as part of Lansky, Bugsy Siegel, John Rosselli organization before the CIA and the U.S. moved in and Robert Mayhew combined with Rosselli and that team. And he tells about taking Josephine Baker out there to sing in Syndicate City and the problems he had with the press and the media because Josephine Baker was against the Nazis during World War II, and she was the target of a lot of hatred. She worked with the French resistance. She had been honored by Charles de Gaulle, the same person that Permandex had tried to murder. They were unsuccessful there, but they did murder the Kennedy brothers and a lot of other people, this under the cloak of Permandex. But she had trouble in the United States because of the Hearst Syndicate, because of her activities against the Nazis. And in this book, William Taub just hints at how pro-Nazi Randolph Hearst was. He was very pro-Nazi, pro-Hitler, Mussolini, and the fact that a woman, a singer, entertainer, fought the Nazis during the last war and then wanted to come to America, he had trouble getting press releases or reviews or acceptance of Josephine Baker. One, for one reason, she was a woman, the other, she was black, but the points that he brings out, the real target of hatred was that she worked with the French resistance to get rid of the Nazis and that the Hearst press would give her and did give her so much trouble in the United States. I mentioned last week on the tape the account of William Taub of how he was left for dead. They thought he was murdered, how the American government wouldn't come and help him at any of the hospitals in Europe or in France and in Switzerland, and how he recuperated from a murder attempt. But you can see why somebody would take him on a dark road in Switzerland and dump this guy, knowing what he did about Richard Nixon and the Trujillo murder and the Central Intelligence Agency's organized crime and the Vatican connections and their satellites and with the Kissinger Nazi connections and the Vatican handing out Rubens and oil paintings as gifts to these type of people. Taub claims he was on the White House tapes because he was in the office with Richard Nixon. He says those tapes had to be destroyed or missing. When the Supreme Court said that Nixon should turn over 9 tapes, he held back 9 tapes, and when they said he should produce them as evidence in the Watergate case, then they said, oh, we're sorry, we only have 7. So 2 entire tapes are gone out of those chunks and pieces are missing, and Taub claims that their conversations about Jimmy Hoffa and various shenanigans that he was involved in took place in the White House and would never be heard because they would have to be eliminated. And as I say, they tried to eliminate him. This is obviously a very important man that wove in and out with members of the CIA, the Vatican, presidents, the White House, the entire echelon of society, making the wheeling, the dealing, and always rubbing against the used forces, Richard Nixon, and certain people that he has centered on that he knew. There are many more in the cast of characters, but he's talking about the people he knew. And I'm sure that once he survived that near death, he decided to tell part of the story, not the whole story, but part of the story, because he could blackmail them to not kill him or try to kill him again by holding back some information, but letting them know how much he had. Forces of Power by William Taub, an important book if you study current history or American history going back to the period after World War II. On the other side of this tape, we're going right to an expose of the Vatican And Mr. Sindona, whose trial begins in New York City, just began this last week. Again, a news blackout, blacked out by Afghanistan and Iran and other matters, but which is terribly important. I'll go into that now on the other side of this tape with you. It's from a Village Voice article called Chapter from the Godfather by Brian Rostron.
In the streets, the children screamed. The lovers cried and the poets dreamed. But not a word was spoken. The church bells all were broken. And the three men